Welcome to Body Sculpt of New York, 6 weeks to fitness podcast, where we hope to inform, motivate, encourage, and inspire you towards living a healthier lifestyle. And now, here's your host, the president of Body Sculpt of New York, Vince Ferguson.
Hi, I'm Vince Ferguson. Welcome to 6 weeks to Fitness, episode number 51. Thank you so much for tuning in. Now, before we begin with today's guest, Shape Up New York City fitness instructor Leslie Sterling, I want to remind everyone to please donate to our fundraising campaign on Indiegogo.com. All donations are tax deductible and will go towards our 12th annual Children's Sports and Fitness Expo, which will take place on Saturday, June 27th. Please go to Indiegogo.com, that's Indiegogo.com, and type in Children's Sports and Fitness Expo. We are counting on your support. In this episode, I will be joined by Leslie Ann Sterling, a poet, writer, mental health advocate, and Shape Up New York City fitness instructor. During the interview, Leslie will share her health challenges, which began immediately following the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center in 2001, when she was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder and severe depression. After treating her mental illness with medication and support from family and friends, Leslie found out she had breast cancer and underwent 6 surgeries, chemotherapy, and radiation, and now is cancer-free. Almost 10 years after her cancer diagnosis, she saw an ad for Body Sculpt of New York's 6 Weeks to Fitness Challenge and decided to participate in the hopes that it would not only improve her physical health, but her mental health as well. Well, it did both. Now Leslie Sterling is a mental health advocate and Shape Up New York City fitness instructor, teaching others how to get in shape physically and mentally. This is a very warm and inspiring episode on how one woman snatched victory from the jaws of defeat. Now remember the words of Maya Angelou, who said, "My mission in life is not merely to survive, but to thrive, and to do so with some passion, some compassion, some humor, and some style." And now that's worth thinking about. Welcome back to 6 Weeks of Fitness. Leslie Sterling is a poet, writer, an administrative consultant, and a mental health advocate who has a passion for sharing fitness and health with her community. She is also a Shape Up New York fitness instructor, teaching cardio dance classes at the Herbert Von King Cultural Arts Center in Brooklyn, New York, every Saturday at 9 a.m. I am very pleased to have Leslie Sterling on our 6 Weeks to Fitness program. Leslie, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful on this second day of spring here in New York.
Yes.
After a snowstorm.
Exactly.
Now, Leslie, before we talk about your work with Shape Up New York, let's talk about you and your personal journey into this healthy lifestyle, okay?
Okay.
Now, were you born and raised in New York City?
Actually, born and raised in Brooklyn.
Give us a little background on your work history, though, Les. I understand you started out working in the arts. Where did you work? What type of work did you do? And so on and so forth.
Okay, well, I actually started in the theater right out of high school, while I was still in high school. A street theater youth company, which was up in White Plains, New York. And we used to go around to the schools in our community, and we would perform. It was an ensemble group, so we actually would do theater workshops, and we'd write the material, write our own monologues, do improvisation to develop scripts, and we'd do things that we felt were relevant to us as young people at the time. So that was my first real job, and I ended up doing that even out of high school. I became a workshop leader and just did a lot of theater at that point. in underground theater, I like to call it, or community theater. So I did that for many years into my from high school into my 20s.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So how long were you at that company?
I was probably at street theater, I'm going to say, probably about 6 years.
Okay, about 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So where did you go from there?
I actually I had a couple of smaller, shorter jobs, did a few different things. But my next major job was at a company called Yale Row Films. And
yes.
It was an independent film and video production company. I started as the receptionist there, and it was such a small office that I was able to make myself as invaluable as possible, and I ended up becoming the office manager and assistant to the president. And
wow.
I did everything from coordinating video shoots to managing the office, and I did bookkeeping and, of course, word processing and, you
wow.
know, just generally I helped to run the business, and that's where
yeah.
I got a lot of my business experience on hand.
I see, I see.
Business experience, yes.
Wow, okay. And so I do believe that the time that I met you, you were working where? At Botanical Gardens?
I was working at Brooklyn Botanic Garden. I was the assistant to the president there as
wow.
well. I started there in around 95. I was a temp at first, and then I was hired permanently. I loved the garden because as a Brooklyn girl, it was one of the places that my grandmother always took us to visit the Botanic Garden among the other cultural institutions in that neck
yes.
of the woods, you know, the library, the museum, Prospect Park, of course. But the garden was an amazing place to work, and I had an incredible boss who I fell in love with, really respected and admired. And I did a lot in the way of work with the cultural institutions that I had grown up with. So it was a great experience for me. I also, of course, the garden is a beautiful place. I spent many of my childhood summers upstate New York. I've always loved nature, being in nature. That was always the best time of year to me. And so being able to work in a place like Brooklyn Botanic Garden was just incredible. I learned a lot about growing things. I actually had my own garden for many years, for about 7-8 years. And I learned everything I, you know, and got lots of plants through Brooklyn Botanic Gardens plant sale and as gifts and things like that, and just learned a lot about growing plants. And it was a very, it was a hard job, very demanding. I learned a lot from my boss, but it was also a beautiful place to work. The people were really incredible people, and we were like family, and I really, it was my favorite job, actually.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yes.
That's awesome. So you had, I would say, some really wonderful experiences in the workforce.
Yes, I've always had great experiences in terms of working. I've always enjoyed my work, and I think that's really important.
Oh, most definitely, because so many of us do not enjoy what we
yes,
do.
Yes,
you know?
That's what I hear, and that's really
you, but
hard.
You wouldn't know about that. Okay.
I don't know about that.
Good for you. Good for you. Now, let me ask you now, during this time, were you involved in an exercise program? Were you working out, eating healthy? What was your health regimen like during the years you were working?
Honestly, aside from loving to dance, I did not have a health regimen. I did not work out. You know, I used to swim. I started swimming as a child. You know, I walked a lot. And like I said, I love to dance. I was like in my 20s, I used to hustle a lot. I don't know if people even remember the hustle. People still do.
I know
but,
I do.
you know, I love couples dancing, and that was a lot of fun. And that gave me, I mean, I would also freestyle. I mean, I danced whatever, however, wherever I could. So that really was the extent of swimming when I, you know, in the warm weather. I would do that, but that was really the extent of my exercise routine. In terms of food, I was raised by my grandmother until I was about 12, and she, my relationship to food, I think at that point was you eat all of the food on your plate. You don't waste
okay.
anything. You eat yeah. what's in front of you. It doesn't matter whether you like it or not. And I think that that kind of changed. When I moved in with my mom in my teens, she loved to take us to restaurants.
Uh-huh.
So we would go to all of these different restaurants eating foods from all over the world. You know, we'd eat
wow.
Italian food, Hawaiian food, Chinese food. Initially, I always wanted a cheeseburger. That was my favorite food. And still is, I have to admit. But, yes,
okay.
I would say that my brother actually cooked. My brother, he started cooking pretty young, and he actually studied, he actually trained as a chef, and he was we were foodies, you see. So, you know, food became an experience. It was entertainment. It was the way that we gathered together, you know, around food. Also, my other grandmother, my paternal grandmother, Nana, she was a huge cook for my family and Thanksgivings and Christmases and things like that. You know, everybody was going to Nana's, and she'd make 50 bajillion dishes, you know, of course, rice and peas and, you know,
yeah.
turkey. And she would cook all week long for all different kinds of people. And so food has been a huge experience in my life.
In the Sterling household,
yes,
really?
Yes, yes, very.
Okay,
so.
For many of us, it's a production.
Yes, yes, yes. And I would say also that I have always been a bit of a sugar baby. I love sweets, and I've always loved meat and
yes.
things that, you know, maybe are not considered to be too good for you.
Exactly. Okay, so, but during this time, because you said you were not really an exercise enthusiast at this time.
No.
You just, your total exposure to exercise was just your ballroom dancing.
Pretty much.
Right?
And occasional swimming, yes, and walking.
Yes.
That's
which is great. I mean, that's an exercise activity. And I firmly believe that in order to be consistent with exercise, you have to find an activity that you enjoy.
I agree. Definitely.
That's the only way you're going to continue doing it. So you were doing it on a regular basis,
mm-hmm.
and that was good. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I believe that I was your first trainer.
Absolutely. Absolutely
so
you were.
When did that come about?
Well, you don't remember. We actually
I'm just remembering right now.
We actually met, interestingly enough. I had actually just turned 40. And we met at Circle of Sisters at the Javits Center.
Ah,
and
yes.
And you were there promoting and selling your book.
Yes.
6 weeks to a six-pack. And
exactly.
I saw this hunky man across the aisles, so to speak, and I said, let me go see what he's selling. And that's how we met. You know, I actually read your book. You know, I read the book, and one of the things that I loved about it was the inspirational quotes that you had at the beginning of each chapter, which inspired me to continue reading the next chapter and the next chapter. And it was simple enough that I was like, you know what? I think I can do this. Like, I think I can start an exercise routine, and I'd like to, you know. And so, yes, not only did I hire you as my personal trainer, once a week you would train me on Saturdays, and that was my first experience with weights, with weight training, and I fell in love with that. I also started taking aerobics classes two or three times a week, and I started walking around Boys and Girls High track. I would walk, maybe 3 miles total, and eventually I started doing a walk-run sort of thing around the track, and eventually I was running 4 or 5 miles about 5 days a week.
Wow, excellent.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes. And that was slowly over the course of a couple of years, but I definitely felt the difference, in my energy level, in my sleep. Of course, there were changes in my body that I wasn't mad at either.
Okay.
So it was great. I fell in love with it.
Okay. And this was all during the time you were at the Botanical Gardens.
I was at Botanic Gardens, yes.
Okay. Now, I believe something happened in your life that caused your health to deteriorate. Now, explain that to my listeners.
Well, the first thing that happened, I have two major health issues. And the first was with my mental health, actually. The events of September 11th, for whatever reasons, maybe because I'm very empathetic, I've always been sensitive to the suffering of other people, and that devastated me. I did not lose anyone in the Twin Towers but it really affected me seeing that, having it be so close to home. It really shook my feelings of safety, and I was literally traumatized. I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, and I became severely depressed and had major anxiety. It became difficult for me to travel on public transportation, to be in crowds. I had to take cabs to work, to and from work all the time. I was teary. I would be at work and I would be overwhelmed with grief. And it was crazy. I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. I struggled with it for a long time, and it was my boss, actually, who said, sometimes things happen, and, when you're struggling like this emotionally, you should go get help, And, I was embarrassed. I didn't want people to see me crying. I didn't want people to perceive me as weak, or, a crybaby or anything. And so I had resisted, but eventually I did seek therapy, and I started taking medication for depression specifically.
Yeah.
And so that was my first real health challenge. And it was devastating in the sense that, it's sort of an invisible sort of thing. Like, it's not like you have a cut or, a cold or something that people can say, oh, well, yeah, you're sick. You clearly,
right,
you're sick. They would, for the most part, you don't blame people for being sick. But with mental illness, it's a whole different animal. And it's very embarrassing, even without exposing yourself, there's something about it that you feel embarrassed. I felt embarrassed about it initially, and I didn't want people to know. I didn't want people to think that I was crazy. So, Yeah, that was my first major health challenge. And, you know, I had regular therapy, and it kind of helped. I'm not going to say that, you know, I never, you know, that all of my symptoms went away with the medication and the therapy, but I was managing.
Yes.
I was managing. And with the support of my boss, you know, I mean, that was pretty major also, to have someone, you know, who understood, was really, I think, critical to my seeking help and continuing to get treatment.
Yes, your boss sounds like a wonderful,
wonderful woman. Incredible woman. Love.
Now, something happened with her.
Yes. She was actually diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. That was in 2003. So, you know, I had been working out for a few years at that point, dealing with the depression. Yes, she was diagnosed, and stage 4, you know, is stage 4. It had actually spread to her. It was in her liver. It spread to her brain. It was a difficult, a really difficult time.
Yes,
one month actually after she was diagnosed, I was diagnosed.
Really? One month after she
one
was
month
diagnosed?
After. And honestly, I didn't even believe my diagnosis, because I felt like I was just having sympathy pains, that it was a mistake, you know,
yes,
that the doctors somehow were mistaken, that my body was giving some false, you know, some false reading, you know, that it couldn't, that it wasn't true. But it was true. I really did have cancer, and the fact that we were diagnosed a month apart was stunning to me. But the worst part, I think, was that hers was stage 4 and mine was caught early. So basically, this woman who I, you know, she was my boss. So, you know, I can't, you know, you're not really friends with your boss, but, you know, I mean, like, we didn't hang out all the time or anything like that, but I loved her. And, you know, I mean, you become family, I think.
Yes.
We became family. And I had so much admiration for her, and she had taught me so much and had allowed me to really thrive and grow in my position there. And, you know, I really didn't know how to process the fact that she was dying.
Yes.
And deal with my own cancer. It was a very odd time in my life. Now, strangely enough, I think that the cancer diagnosis made me focus. I had to focus on, you know, because now I'm having all these surgeries and procedures, and I have to have chemo, and I have to have radiation. And I mean, I couldn't even get one of my surgeries required that I have lymph nodes removed from my right side, which basically means, like, on the right side, I cannot have blood taken or get my blood pressure. So I only have one arm to receive chemo. And basically, because I had one arm and some very tiny veins, apparently, I had to get a metaport put in my chest so that I could receive my chemo. That was one of about six surgeries that I had in the course of about a year and a half. And at the same time, you know, I was trying to hold on to my job. You know, I was dealing with my boss's, well, she eventually did pass while I was still working at the Garden. And so it was a very challenging time, but I think that it kind of, I wasn't focused on my mental health anymore. I was just really focused on my physical health, and I and that's all that I could do was get through. It's like, okay, I have to have another surgery. Okay, now I have to have chemo. Okay, now I have to do radiation. And I just, you know, one step at a time, one day at a time, you know, I just tried to put one foot in front of the other. And I don't think I received any, I wasn't going to therapy anymore. It was all about my physical health.
Yes. And so what happened? You were able to deal with the cancer.
So the cancer was, I had an amazing, I had a couple of amazing doctors. I just got really good care. I mean, I really was very lucky to have the cancer, you know, caught early and to have such good medical care, because that's, like, really critical. And so I basically went through, like I said, the number of surgeries, the chemo and radiation. And when everything was said and done, you know, now I'm basically well. You know what I mean? The cancer is in remission, and they've removed it all. I opted to have bilateral mastectomies. Because cancer runs in my family. So rather than, you know, having to go through it a second time 5 years later, I did this prophylactically, you know, the bilateral mastectomies to just try and nip it in the bud, which was actually a good thing, because there were cancer cells in the left side, as in the left breast as well. So it was something that, you know, once it was all said and done, and I now am, I'm alive, you know, I'm basically physically okay, you know, receiving whatever, you know, following up with my oncologist and, you know, getting good care. But now by this point, my boss has passed, and I'm left to deal with my emotions again. You know, my physical body is basically, you know, okay.
Yeah.
But I think that the depression and the emotions, I was overwhelmed. And everything just came rushing back, and nothing was the same for me with my boss not there. I mean, you know, it's still the most beautiful place, one of the most beautiful places in the world, but it was hard to be there. Because everything reminded me of her. And I basically, I think that I had a lot of survivor's guilt. You know, like, why me? Why did I live? Why not her? She was such an amazing person. She, you know, she was incredible. You know, so I did that in my head. And I actually had to resign because I just, I couldn't function. I was no longer functioning at the level that I used to function. So, and another thing that your audience should know is that I started after all of my treatments and everything was all said and done, and I'm back with this depression and what or whatever it was, you know, I was suicidal. Even though I had survived cancer, I didn't understand why I had survived it. I didn't think I deserved to be alive. I didn't have, like, a plan to kill myself or anything, but I did not want to be here.
I
was that distraught. And that confused and that overwhelmed. And I started using cocaine. I believe that it was a way to, well, lots of places say that When you have a mental illness, you self-medicate. They talk about that a lot, where you self-medicate because you're trying to numb whatever feelings you're having. Some people
right.
do it with alcohol or, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of drugs that you can take. And so my drug of choice was cocaine.
Hmm.
And while I was doing all of that, you know, I was back and forth. You know, I want to die. No, I want to live. I want to stop using these drugs. I want to stop feeling this pain. It was my oncologist, as a matter of fact, who I had to see on a regular basis. And every time I went to his office, I was crying. I was overwhelmed. I was having anxiety attacks. I was using, and I kind of confessed to everybody because I think I was, you know, to my family and to friends and to my doctors because I think I wanted help. And, you know, he said, it doesn't make sense for me to treat you because I had to take some tamoxifen and just get regular checkups. But he was like, you need to go get help, is what my boss told me. Go get help. And
right.
so I actually, before I would get help, I had to be hospitalized. I was hospitalized once at Interfaith Medical Center in the psychiatric ward because I basically had a little breakdown. That, you know, it was the most awful. I was there for 10 days. And it was like being in prison. You know, you had to have certain days where you could get visitors. And, you know, but even though it was one of the worst experiences of my life, it changed my life. And it was the beginning of me getting help and healing. Through Interfaith, I ended up in what they call a MICA program, which is for people who have mental illness and chemical abuse problems. And I basically went for 5 days a week, you know, about 4 hours a day. And
right.
There were different groups that I participated in. Some of it was talk therapy. You know, we would talk about our addiction problems. Some of it was focused around health, nutrition, some of it was art therapy. And that kind of brought me full circle because I would do a writing group. I did photography.
Yes.
I did drawing. I did dance therapy. I participated in a study about music therapy for patients who were grieving. And
wow.
all of those things combined allowed me to really examine, of course, you know, what had happened to me, why, you know, I started using, what that was about, and to really come back to myself, you know, to address my feelings of guilt about, you know, surviving cancer, and to, you know, just really deal with my emotions, my health, you know, and where I wanted to go and where I wanted to be. And I started to heal. And in doing the dance and the other activities, I was able to come to a better place. And so I've actually been drug-free. It's been like 3 years now.
Congratulations.
Thank
Great.
You. yeah, it's – and the next thing, I guess, that happened during, you know, during the course of my being in the MICA program was I ran into you again.
And me again.
Yes, I ran into you. You were doing one of your 6 weeks to fitness challenges at Boys and Girls High. I think you had two or three classes going on there along with the nutrition component, which I think
yes.
is so really amazing and important.
Yes.
And so I decided to do the 6 weeks challenge. I'll never forget your face when you saw me, but we won't talk about that.
Well, you changed a little bit.
But,
for the first time I was training, you know.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You're still Leslie Sterling.
Yes. And so that was the beginning, you know, of me exercising again. This is now like 10 years later.
Wow, yes.
So, you know, you have done lots of the 6 weeks classes in addition to the challenges. And so, as you well know, I've taken quite a number of your 6 weeks to fitness classes. And we've done some work together since that time.
Yes, most definitely, definitely. But let me ask you a question. Let me just step back a little bit. Because I know that you have a lovely daughter named Nia.
Yes, I do.
Who works and attends college, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Now, how did she deal with your situation when you were going through those trials?
Oh, my poor baby. She, well, she's an amazingly strong young woman. She's 25 now, but she was only 13
at the time
I was diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, as a single parent, you know, and, you know, with only one child, I know that it had to be hard on her.
Yeah.
But she's a very strong young lady. She's always been extremely independent. And she used to be, prior to my cancer diagnosis, there was the depression. And so she would hear me crying many times. And she would come to me, you know, and comfort me. That was what we were always very close. We did everything together. She had lots of activities and friends and things to do. I felt like that was really important for an only child. But we were extremely close, and I think she wanted to help. As a 13-year-old dealing with a mom who has cancer, and then, you know, then there was my drug addiction. And at first I hid it from her, as I hid it from, you know, everyone. But at the point that I realized that I'm in serious trouble here, I really don't want to die, I really do want to be here, I felt like the first thing I needed to do was confess. And I confessed to her. Primarily because I wanted her to, I felt like it was important for her to know, you know, what I was struggling with and to be honest with her about that. About my emotional life, about so that if she ever, you know, had any issues, you know, that she would know that it was okay to get help, you know,
to
talk about it. You know, I felt like it was really important to model for her how to deal with my mental illness, my addiction, and having cancer, especially since it runs in the family. So I shared that with her. She handled it amazingly well for a young teenager. And maybe she's stronger for it. I mean, you know, you would have to ask her, you know.
Right. Well, I've met her. I'm pretty sure she's strong.
Yes.
She's very
strong. She's very strong, very independent, and very compassionate. I think that she has a level of understanding and compassion that maybe not all people, young people her age have because of what she's lived through and experienced herself and what she's seen me go through.
Right.
So, yeah, she's an incredible young woman. I'm extremely proud of her.
I know you are.
And she inspires me and has, you know, she inspired me back then and she continues to inspire me to take care of myself and to be well just so that I can model that for her. You know, I want her to be well. want her to be happy and to be healthy, as healthy as possible. So.
Okay, and that's excellent. And now you run into Vince Ferguson at the 6 weeks of fitness challenge.
Yes.
And your life changes again.
Yes. Yes, it was all good.
Which is all good. So you started exercising and exactly. Taking the nutrition classes,
yes,
right?
Yes, that was really great.
With Orvel. With Orvel Douglas.
I love the information. Because I've taken the six-week classes, a number of cycles of the six-week classes, I
yes.
have had Orvel's teachings kind of drummed into my head. I can't say that I am following all of the teachings because I am a recovering foodie.
Yes.
But I've certainly learned so much from him and respect and admire what he's done in his own life, you know,
yes.
being healthy. And, he's inspirational, and I continue myself to try to adjust my own eating habits to really think about my relationship with food, you know, what I take into my body, why am I eating this, you know, what am I eating. So I've learned to eat more natural foods. I do not eat packaged, processed foods. I do not eat white bread or pasta. I'm still a bad girl. And like I said, I'm a sugar baby, and I love, you know, I don't know what to say about meat. There are people who are vegetarian who to me seem extremely healthy, and I know people who are paleo or other variations of that who to me seem extremely healthy. I don't know. Maybe we come from different tribes. I believe that for me, you know, I believe that I need to honor my own body, listen to my own body. We can't all,
yeah.
you know, some people become vegetarians or change their diets overnight. You know, they have an aha moment or just a I'm tired of this, and they just go cold turkey on everything. But I think for many of us, you know, changing your diet, just like exercising, is a process. It's something that, you know, for me, it's not like, oh, tomorrow I'll be vegetarian. You know, just like tomorrow I'll be 100 and whatever pounds. No, you have to, I approach it as a lifestyle. You know,
yes.
every day I'm trying to be as healthy as I can, to make healthy choices. It's something that I have to do every day. It's not like, oh, when I get to this point or when I stop doing this. No, every day I am looking to make the best choices for myself based on where I am, my own history, my relationship to food and exercise, my abilities, you know, because I've, you know, done a lot of 6 weeks to fitness classes, and everybody is not where I started is not where I am right now. You know, you condition yourself, you get better with practice. And
yes.
So I think that is true in regards to our health, that, you know, every day we need to practice making the best choices for ourselves and improving those choices.
Yes, most definitely.
Yeah.
And now that you are more more involved with fitness and exercise, you are a Shape Up New York City instructor. How did that come about?
I have to give you kudos, you know, because
you told me.
You told me, you sent me the information on Shape Up NYC. And I guess, you know, that's based on the fact that you knew of my interest in doing that, in actually being a fitness instructor. And it was perfect timing.
Yes.
I applied, and I was accepted, and I was so – it was one of the best days of my life when I received my little email saying, yes, you got in.
Wow.
So I Shape Up
NYC is a free citywide program through the New York City Department of Parks and Recreation.
Okay.
And what they do is, well, for fitness instructors, they have their fitness instructor training program, which is a 10-week program where you learn basic anatomy and kinesiology, music, cueing, all these different things to help you become an instructor. And once you complete that 10-week training, you go on to do a six-month internship.
6 months?
Yes, 6 months.
Wow.
You teach a one-hour class weekly, and
okay.
upon completion of that 6 months, you get your certificate, and you are prepared for national certification for those who are interested, which I'm extremely interested. I plan on taking the AFA exam as soon as possible.
Nice.
And so, yes, I teach cardio house party. It's a cardio dance class at Herbert
right.
Von King Cultural Arts Center in Brooklyn. And
that's every Saturday?
Every
Leslie?
Saturday at 9:30.
Nice.
And
it's free.
It's free.
Wow.
So the instructor training is free, and then they offer, Shape Up offers classes in all the boroughs, all different kinds of classes, cardio
wow.
dance, things like kickboxing. They have Zumba. There are people who teach yoga, Pilates. They have, you will find something, and I know you really believe this, that people, if they find something that they love doing, an activity that they love doing, that they will keep doing it. And there is
Definitely.
So much to choose from in terms of the Shape Up NYC classes. You've got to be able to find something that you will love, and it's for all different fitness levels. So I encourage people to go look up nyc.gov, Parks Department Shape Up NYC, and
Great.
Look at the list of classes that they have available. But I love teaching, particularly in my community. This is my neighborhood I'm teaching in. And even though the winter has been brutal on all
brutal
of us.
Here in New York.
Yeah. Here in
a little
New
brutal.
York, it has been a little rough. One of the coldest winters, I think, on record, and all the snow and ice and everything. But I love it. I love it, and I'm excited that I can give back to my community.
Yes.
This love of fitness, I it's so important. It's been so important to me and my health, and I love sharing that with people.
Yes, excellent.
Yes.
Leslie, what are your future goals?
Well, I want to get my AFA certification.
Okay, very good.
I would like to continue to teach fitness classes.
Yes.
Group fitness classes, and I would also like to do some personal training, because I think that working with people one-on-one allows you to really, really hone in on a person's goals and, their lifestyle and what they may need more directly than what you can offer them in a group setting. I mean, I think both aspects of teaching or training are really important, and I'd like to do both. So that is big for me. I do have other activities. I am on the Brooklyn Mental Health Council's Creative Art Therapy Committee, and that is a group that promotes the creative art therapies to the general public and helps to educate people about the value of creative art therapies. And I've always, the arts have played a huge part in my life from the time that I was young, and they helped to heal me during my struggles with my mental illness and addiction. And I really also wanted to be able to assist in speaking for people who have a mental illness. I'm actually, you know, I mentioned that I had post-traumatic stress disorder and I was, you know, diagnosed with depression. I actually got a diagnosis as being bipolar. All of you know, there's so many different mental illnesses, and you know, I don't think that people know a lot about them or what they mean or what it, how difficult it is to manage life when you have a mental illness. So one of my goals is to help educate people about the stigma associated with mental illnesses.
Yes.
And just to make it okay for people to talk about it, learn about it, and use the arts as a way to promote healing. I think
right.
that writing or dancing or listening to music, exercising.
Yes,
exercising, doing yoga, jumping, you know, running, swimming. These are all things that I think can really help people with all people. But, you know, that if it is used to heal people or be a part of the treatment for people who have mental illnesses, I think that they'll make a lot more progress. Like, just talking about stuff is not really enough,
right.
I think. I think that, you know, you really want to engage people in activities that allow them to release and to express and to find safety and security. And, yeah, so the Brooklyn Mental Health Council's Creative Art Therapy Committee is one of my passions.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I also, as a writer, I am working on my own book. It's a collection of poetry, prose, short stories. I take photographs, and I also draw. So I'm putting all that together in a book called To Whom It May Concern, Views from the Bridge. And
nice.
That's another project that is close to my heart. That I'm working on.
You expect to have it out this year?
I expect to have it out closer to 2016 because of all
okay.
that I have on my plate.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes. I have a lot on my plate. And,
I know you do.
And actually, my AFA certification has become more of a priority for me. I really want to make sure that I get that in place because I'm anxious to do fitness as a full-time job. You know, that's what I want to do.
And because you have so much experience, not just with physical stresses, but also mental stresses, you can help so many people on both levels.
That is the goal. That is exactly the goal. Because of my age, because of my history and the mental health history, and also, you know, having a lot of surgeries, having, you know, being a cancer survivor, you know, I realize that there are so many people who have health challenges, whether they're mental or physical. And they may feel like, oh, I'm too old, you know, I'm too sick, I'm too overwhelmed, I'm too tired, I'm too this, to exercise, to take care of myself. And for me, addressing your health, physical and mental, is an act of self-love. And I think that I would like to inspire people to go ahead and take the plunge, to show them, you know, that you can, if I can do it, people say this all the time, if I can do it. You see it on commercials and stuff, if I could do it. But, you know, I'm going to be 55, and I know that my daughter is strong and beautiful, but I can run farther, and I could run faster, and I'm stronger than she is. Okay, and she knows it. She'll be the first to admit it. I can push more weight than she can, and I'm only going to get stronger. And I say that, you know, to say that, you know, everybody is not going to like want to work out 5 days a week, you know, because I could be a little crazy. They may not want to do all these different classes that I mean, I take crazy classes that I love them. I love, you know, weights. I love to swim. I love to run. I love to, you're not going to love every single thing, but you can start where you are. I have a woman in my class, in my shape up class, who's 72 years old. And since I started back in mid-January, she has been to every single one of those classes. You know,
wow.
72. My mom, you know, I didn't talk about this. My mom is like a big inspiration in terms of me starting to exercise at 40, because I went to visit her in Delaware, and she wanted me to push her husband, who was in a wheelchair. He's about 250, going up 300 pounds in the wheelchair, and it was a slight incline. It wasn't really a hill, but it was an incline, and I could not do it, but my mother could. And that was like a wake-up call. She's done lots of – she's very strong. She's a fast walker. My daughter Nia and I, when we would walk with her, we have to, like, almost jog next to her because she doesn't know how to stroll. She's like, I gotta move. It's time to go. Let's walk. She doesn't like people who like move slowly. She's, you know, and she's 78 and she still exercises. She walks. She's done volunteer work for the hospitals and for the Veterans Association. And she has really inspired me to like, okay, if my mom can do this, if she can move, and she actually fell down some steps when she was in her 20s, and so she's had, like, constant neck and back pain throughout her life. But it does not stop her from moving. So my mom, this woman who comes to my class at 72, people like Ernie Shepherd, who's, like, the oldest female bodybuilder. I mean, people who, you know, in spite of their age, or their story, any ailments or illnesses. My mother is a breast cancer survivor. She's strong and vibrant and active and participating in her life. And I think that that's what I would like to share with people, to inspire them to that at any age, you know, no matter your disabilities, you know, no matter where you are, you can start to take better care of yourself.
Most definitely. Mm-hmm. Most definitely. And Leslie Ann Sterling, on behalf of Body Scope of New York and 6 Weeks to Fitness, I want to thank you for coming on our show.
You are very welcome, Vincent.
Wow, it was great. And to my listeners, I truly hope this program was informative, encouraging, and inspiring, and that you will continue tuning in to our 6 Weeks to Fitness podcast. And if you have any questions or comments, please leave them on my 6 Weeks to Fitness blog at www.6weeks.com or email me at vince@6weeks.com. Take care and bye-bye.